It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Dinky. And we were just talking before we started recording. It's, for the first time in quite a while, relatively quiet in fantasy world. Certainly some significant news, but not the sort of onslaught of news that we have seen in recent weeks. So we will start with what is certainly the biggest news in baseball over the past week, and that is Bryce Harper to the DL with a hyperextended knee and a bone bruise. It was ugly. It looked far worse. And I think I've taken this stance before, and it's certainly understandable if you disagree. But here's where I come down to on Bryce Harper. We don't know how quickly he's going to heal, but this comes down to one of those sort of emotional decisions for me more than a rational decision, and that is I would feel so unbelievably stupid if he came back and just lit up the world for 3 or 4 weeks upon returning. I would feel so stupid for having dropped him. I understand the math. I understand he doesn't have a lot of at-bats left, almost certainly. I am not prepared to live with how dumb I would feel if somebody picked him up and he raked over his final weeks. Do you see a case to view it differently from that?
Yeah, I'm more negative than you on this one. I actually did drop Harper in the Tout Wars League. Now, in the Tout Wars League, which is a 15-team league, there's a benefit to dropping a player because you can get money back for bidding on free agents for dropping players you invested in at the auction. So that was part of my reasoning. But I just feel like this injury is significant enough that we're just going to see Harper for a week or two, if that. And maybe I'll be wrong on that, but if my DL was already full from players that can be back, say, at the beginning of the month, beginning of September, I would feel comfortable dropping him. And I know what you mean about, you know, he is someone who could really burn you. I just can't imagine from this hyperextended knee and the bone bruise right on the knee that I just can't imagine that he's back early in September. I feel, and the Nats have run away with the division. So I just feel like they'll want to get him if they even can, like a week of at-bats, maybe even 10 days or something. But I can't see him being back for 3 weeks. Maybe I'll be wrong on that, but I'm a little more cutthroat with Harper. I'm just not optimistic he'll be back soon.
Well, and I guess I should have been a little clearer about that, because I think rationally I absolutely think that that's the right approach. You know, I think that from any sort of, you know, kind of actuarial perspective, you kind of do the math and what makes sense. That I think that makes sense. It's a really short list of guys. You know, if we were talking about even a Josh Donaldson here, who's a really good player, maybe a bad example because he's not having a great year, but if we're talking about somebody at that level, a guy who went somewhere between 8 and 15, you know, well, actually, that's Harper this year, but we're talking about somebody who has not shown the absolute ridiculous ceiling that Harper has, I would be okay with nearly anybody else. It's maybe like a three-man group. It's basically four, probably. It's probably a four-man group that I would think of the way I think of him. It's basically him, Trout, Kershaw, and Scherzer. And, again, I wouldn't even tell somebody who saw it the way you do that they're wrong. They're probably right. But for me personally, as somebody who had one of those guys, I just couldn't do it.
I will say also that part of my thinking with Harper is that outfield's nice and deep this year. So
that's true.
Most leagues, you can get a pretty good outfielder, you know, to replace him. I would be more apt to keep him, for example, if he was a catcher. For example, I was pretty high on keeping Sal Perez just because I feel like the alternative to Sal Perez, you know, for the rest of the season, if you let him go, is really ugly. Whereas you could get someone who obviously won't be as good as Harper was, but with that spot, I don't know, I might rather stash a starting pitcher just because, you know, like a James Paxton or something like that, because I think he'll probably be back sooner than Harper, and there aren't many starters that you can rely on waivers, whereas there are some exciting outfielders.
Yep. No, I think that all makes sense, and I think that's all entirely defensible, and I'm just talking where I am. I'd really have a hard time doing it. Do you think there's a trade? Do you think there are trade opportunities with Harper? Do you think there's anybody in either direction? Do you think there's any kind of trade opportunity, or are you just pretty confident that we're really only talking a week or two and so it doesn't make sense in either direction?
No, I could see. I mean, in a lot of leagues, the trade deadline passed or is passing right around now. But if a Harper owner, for example, needed help right away and someone else could afford to wait, you know, there could be, if the Harper owner doesn't have a deep outfield and someone else in the league does have a really deep outfield, then there's a possible trade opportunity where that owner with a deep outfield could say, hey, I'll take my chances. I'll trade you my third or fourth outfielder and take my chances that I can get a couple nice weeks out of Harper, you know, at the end of the season. And then the other person says, well, I like the outfielder. You're offering me a lot more than what's on waivers, so I'll take the offer. Yeah, for sure.
We move to another of the game's elite sluggers and a guy who has been just otherworldly lately. Giancarlo Stanton is having a power surge, the likes of which we haven't seen many times, really in our lifetimes, and we've seen a lot of power. As if you're over about 15, you've seen an awful lot of power surges in your life as a baseball fan, but we haven't seen many like this. He's on another planet. It's very early, and we don't know how he finishes the season. And if he tails off from here, then it's a great 6 weeks and not a setting of a new level. But let's figure what we know now. How high is he putting himself in a 2018 conversation?
Yeah, I think he's put himself back in the first round for sure. And I think that if he finishes the season strong, like if he ends up with a home run total in the high 50s, whether he gets to 60 or not, like if he gets north of 55, say 55 or more, I think then he's moved to, okay, to me, I was kind of trying to think about this. I think in my head, obviously Trout's still ahead of him. I think Altuve's ahead of him. I think Goldschmidt's still ahead of him. I think Arenado's still ahead of him. And then whether you want to put pitchers ahead of him or not is more up to the individual drafter. But I think he's then after that. So I think he's put himself back into the middle of the first round. I think that we can't overlook the fact that he's been injured so many times in previous seasons. But to me, the big story on Stanton at the end of this year will be whether he plays throughout the season without going on the disabled list. That to me is the big story, because saying that Stanton would lead the league in homers if he didn't go on the DL, well, that made a lot of sense. The big variable to me is that he hasn't gone on the DL. And I know this recent stretch is ridiculously hot, but I think most people would believe if Stanton played all 6 months of the season that he would have at some point a really nice hot streak. This might be a little hotter than they imagine, but I think he's into the top 10 for next year if he just doesn't go on the DL the rest of the way. Are you as optimistic on him as I am?
Yeah, I think that's entirely reasonable. You know, one of the things that jumps out to me, and the parallel to his 2014 season, which was his previous best season, is that this is a guy who, at his best, can hit 280. He hit 288 in 2014. He's hitting 287 this year. Now, a lot of that is because how often the ball is just leaving the yard, and it's not doesn't have a chance to fall in somebody's glove. But, you know, I think that's one of the things that stands out about him, is he does have that in his bag of clubs. He hit 290 in 2012. So, you know, it's been really up and down, and in other years he hit 240 last year, but he does have that 280 to 290 ability. This is not the first time he's done it. This is not out of nowhere, and he's a guy who can hit for elite power and hit for average at the same time. And so the question I would have, I think one guy you didn't mention in terms of that math is, let's say Harper comes back enough to be confident that he's right. He comes back, even if it's a week or two, comes back for a week or two and is really good in the postseason, or comes back for 2 or 3 weeks down the stretch and does enough just to really show that this is just an injury that happened in season and he's fine. There's no reason to worry about that for next year. Where do you put those two guys relative to each other for 18?
You actually just stole my follow-up question, because that's what I was going to ask you. I think Harper and Stanton are really interesting comparables. Once you get past those first four or five players who have been really consistent recent seasons, I think they're that middle of the first round, high risk, high reward. I mean, Harper is clearly injury. He has been injury prone in his career so far. And he has that 2016 season where he underperformed. Stanton's had stretches where he's underperformed and has been injury prone. I think they're very comparable. I think I slightly lean Harper, but if Stanton hit 60 home runs this year, then I may swing back to him. Where do you feel like you are? If you're drafting for 2018 today, would you rather have Harper or Stanton?
I think I have Harper by a nose, partly because, and you can sort of look at, you can look at his 2016 in a couple of very different ways. You can just say it was a bad year. I think, and he's even hinted at this recently, he never admitted it during the season, but there were reports, there was evidence in the numbers, there was evidence in watching him. It certainly appeared that he was dealing with a significant physical issue last year. I believe it was his shoulder. So, to me, on the one hand, that is another piece of evidence that he has trouble staying healthy. On the other hand, I don't take it as a ding on his performance. I think the real Bryce Harper is 2015 and 2017, and what we saw in 16 was a physically compromised player. So I think the real Harper is an over 300, 40-plus home run guy playing in one of the best lineups in the game. So I take him by a nose, but I think it's a really fair and interesting question. And I think that the point is, I think those two guys, as you note, are in pretty similar places when we're talking about 2018 drafting.
Yeah, I mean, that'll be the middle of the first round, I think. Do you want to risk one of them? And I'll throw Kershaw in with them as well, because it's the same kind of thing where if they play for 6 months, they're game changers, huge assets to your team. But there's going to be, with Kershaw, it doesn't matter what happens the rest of the way. There's going to be a significant question about whether he plays 6 months next season. So I think that'll be the real risk reward in the middle of the first round next year.
Yes. Miguel Cabrera has just, he wasn't himself for the first 2 months of the season. He has been, and it's sad to say, he's just been not good. He's been not good for a major league hitter, never mind a first baseman or a fantasy first baseman. Since the beginning of July, he's just flat been not good. Is he a full drop in mixed league formats?
I think he's a drop in 10-team leagues, and I think in 12-team leagues, I am probably not dropping him, but I would bench him. I mean, yeah, as you mentioned, like his OPS since the start of July is in the low 600s. He hasn't had an OPS over 867, which is like good enough, but in this era, like this year, not great in any month this season. So it's not like he's had ups and downs. There really haven't been any ups. He had 5 home runs in June. That's the only month he's hit more than 3. He hasn't scored more than 12 runs in any month this year. Like, it just isn't happening. And like, I'm not prepared to write off Miguel Cabrera for 2018 and beyond, but I wouldn't argue with someone, and I haven't argued with people who have tweeted me and said, you know, should I drop Cabrera and pick up? Someone asked me, I think 2 days ago on Twitter, should I drop Cabrera and pick up Rafael Devers? And I said, I go ahead and pick up Devers. Like, he's hot. He's in a good lineup. Go for it. I'm okay with dropping Cabrera. Would you be bold enough to drop him? Because that, like the Harper decision at the beginning, is a little bit of an emotional one along with strategic.
I think I would. You hit on this. I'm not sure what the upside is on him at this point. I can see him hitting, 280 with 8 home runs down the stretch, and that's a good player. That's a good player. I can see him doing that, but I have a really hard time seeing him being the guy we're used to seeing in recent years. He doesn't look like the same guy, and so early in the year, he was hitting into bad luck. Early in the year, a lot of his sort of Statcast indicators were a lot better than the results, but right now, he's just not right, and the power's just vanished, and that's what's kind of distressing to me, is that it had faded some. He was not the same power beast that he was 5 years ago, but it's pretty much gone lately, and that's really disconcerting. The one thing, look, I know he and Albert Pujols are not the same player, but they've had parallel careers in a lot of ways, and when Pujols began his decline, he ceased to hit for average like he used to, but he maintained a lot of the power, well into his 30s. Cabrera's power has vanished, and that's really disconcerting. He's slugging .408. That's ugh.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if he regroups in the off season, and maybe he does make one of those decisions. Am I going to try to still be a 300 hitter, or am I going to, with 20 homers, or am I going to try to sell out for power? And maybe he comes back next year and he's regrouped and he's better. We'll have to see where he falls in drafts next year before we really have a long-term opinion on him. But for the rest of this year, and his Statcast data is still okay, but we're 20 plus weeks into the season. Yeah. I feel like the odds that he catches fire in the next week, 10 days, is pretty low. And if he just has a nice last couple weeks later in September, well, if you dropped him now, I don't think you'll really regret it.
Right, that's the thing, is there's enough out there that he's got to really catch fire for him to be a guy you'd regret dropping.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of waiver wires and guys that you could pick up, not at a corner bat, but as a bat, Eddie Rosario has been outstanding. He's really good. His power is not through the roof, but he's been a really good hitter this year, and is available all over the place. I just picked him up in my office mixed league. How high are you on him? Is he a guy you're targeting right now in some of those places where he's available if you have a need?
Yeah, I think so, and I think he's one of those nice Harper replacements. For people who are looking for an outfielder who could hit for a decent batting average, that's him, 277 career. That's not Harper, but it's not bad. He can hit for some power, steals the odd base. I think he's a nice fill-in right now. Like, I know that his plate discipline isn't good, but this year, although it's not good, it's a lot better than it has been in the previous 2 years. So he's making strides in the right direction, and I think we have to move past that sometimes because we've seen so many hitters, whether it's Adam Jones, whether it's Jonathan Scope, whether it's Rougned Odor, not this year, but prior to this year, have a lot of fantasy production without great plate discipline, a great strikeout to walk ratio. I think Rosario can totally do that. I think this is someone who could supply you in a full season with maybe even 25 home runs and 8 or 10 steals and a decent batting average. So I think you picking him up was a good idea. I think more people need to add him.
I think there are a couple of things with Rosario in the strike zone, and one is that I think there is an extreme that is not sustainable. You look at what he did in 2015 and 2016, where he had a total of 22 unintentional walks against 209 strikeouts over 800 or so plate appearances. That I don't think that's sustainable. I think eventually that is just a guy you can't carry. But, you know, ratios that we would have sort of glanced at in the past are sustainable. You know, what he's doing this year, it's a 3-to-1 instead of a 9-to-1 strikeout to walk. That's perfectly reasonable, and he doesn't strike out that much by 2017 standards. The other thing to me, and I think that it's Aaron Gleeman who has pointed this out a few times, is that he's really shown some skill improvement. He chases less, and he's done it. It's not just for a month or two. It's over the full season. He has shown some underlying skill improvement that gives you belief that this new ratio is real. And there's no reason that a 3-to-1 strikeout-to-walk ratio can keep a guy from being a productive hitter. Compared to somebody like Michael Taylor, who is somebody who I had really gotten in on and who I think in some ways has a higher upside from fantasy perspective because of the power-speed combination. But I still don't know that we know exactly what Taylor is upon coming back from his injury. Would you rather have Taylor's upside of that power-speed combination or Rosario, who at this point is kind of a known quantity for 2017?
Yeah, I would prefer Rosario. And to me, I guess it's a little close, but not really close. And I'll explain why. First of all, as far as bad, you know, walk-to-strikeout ratios go, Taylor's is even worse this year. It's a little worse than 4-to-1. And Taylor's hitting 275 this year, but that comes with a pretty high BABIP. And in his career, he hasn't been a good hitter. A good hitter for producing batting average. He's career 240. Whereas Rosario, even in those previous years, could go in the 260s. And I would normally say that Taylor's hitting in a much better lineup, but you take Bryce Harper out of that lineup for most of the rest of the season, and you take Trey Turner out still for a while. I think the Nats lineup's still better, but it loses a lot of its luster. And Taylor's coming off a fairly long-term injury, so we're not sure what he'll be like right now, whereas Rosario's rolling. So I think I would really prefer Rosario. I think he's someone, like I said, though, I think he's a great Harper replacement, or just for people who are looking for someone to get on board with down the stretch. He's a 25-year-old who's showing skill improvements, and that's really nice to see.
The specific thing that worries me about Taylor, and it's not a big group, but it's something that I do worry about when I see it. A guy who takes a step forward and really shows something he hasn't shown before and then misses a lot of time with an injury, I can't help wondering, you know, you give him a full year to sort of maintain that and get all of whatever he's doing ingrained. You stop him midway through and he goes through rehab. He sort of has to find it again. And I think it's harder. This is not really based on any evidence. This is kind of a vibe feel thing. So I acknowledge that this is not scientific. But I can't shake an idea in the back of my head that it's harder for a guy who hasn't done that for a long time to get back to that level after missing time than it is for somebody who has years of kind of knowing, this is who I am, this is what works when I'm going right. I definitely wonder whether Taylor will be able to find that again this year upon – upon returning. And he's a guy I'd gotten pretty excited about, but I just am not entirely convinced that he's going to be able to get back to there. Dustin Pedroia, hurt again, still hasn't been that productive. In what leagues are you still holding on to him?
15-team leagues, you'd hold him, I think, for sure. 12-team leagues, though, I think you have to let him go. It's the second half of August. He has 6 homers and 4 steals. And he's played a fair amount of games, but he's played 86 games this year. So, and this is kind of what – I know he's hitting .303, but this is kind of – the last few years, his fantasy value's gone up and down a lot. Like, he has years where he doesn't even hit 10 home runs. He's not a big base stealer anymore. He really walks a fine line where – to be 10-team league and even 12-team league relevant, he needs to be playing every day. He needs to be at the top of his game and scoring a lot of runs. And that's not happening. I think I'm letting him go in probably most 12-team leagues as well. What about you?
I would have no problem with that. Because I'm partly because I'm just not at all confident of how much he's going to play down the stretch and what he's going to offer when he does. I think that he's a guy. The Red Sox aren't in by any means, but they're in pretty good shape. They don't need to rush him back. Their goal is likely going to be make sure that Pedroia can play in October. So there's no reason. I mean, that can change. Look, anything can change in a week. They can go from 5 games up to a game up in a week, and suddenly that equation changes. But right now, I think that their priority is going to be just make sure he's right 7 weeks from now.
Yeah, and I mean, he has a nagging knee injury, so I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't steal any bases the rest of the season, like one or less. And he's not, I mentioned the run scoring, this is someone who when things are going, well, last year, 105 runs scored. This year, 388 plate appearances, 37 runs scored. Like, that's putting him on pace even if he played a full season, you know, score about 60, 65 runs. Yeah. Like, it's just, that's not worth waiting around for when he's not stealing bases or hitting for power.
Zach Cozart has come back from the DL and is still hitting for power, and I think that's what stands out to me about him. He's hit for average this year, but he is just tattooing the ball. Is he just a plug and play at this point?
I think pretty much. And I mean, we look back at last season where he hit 16 home runs, which was a bit in just 121 games, which was a big improvement for him. But he's gone to another level this year with 17 homers in 86 games. Even if the batting average falls a little bit, and there is a little bit of BABIP to suggest it might fall a little bit, even if he could be a .280 hitter who can work off of like a 25 homer type pace or even more, because his pace is better than that this year, then I think he is pretty plug and play, and they keep him in those premium lineup spots. And when you're hitting around Joey Votto, that's a really good thing. I know that's not the deepest lineup in baseball, but when you're around Joey Votto, that's a pretty good thing. Like Matthew, you pretty, we were, I think we talked about him a couple months ago and weren't that complimentary of him when he first went on the DL back in June, but I've come around on him more. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I have too. Yeah. I'm, you know, maybe not a full buy, but, or no, that's not fair. I'm still, you know, I'm not sure this is what he is, but I certainly am sure enough that I'm not looking to replace him or to sit him if he's on my roster.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to give away my opinion on this matter by the way I ask the question. We have 1,300 plate appearances that say that C.J. Cron is somewhere around a .440 slugger, and 60 plate appearances that say that he is a legitimate big league power threat. Which of those do you believe?
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you on this one. C.J. Cron to me is someone who, in his career, and I can't completely statistically back this up, but seems to catch fire for a few days every season, but cannot sustain it. I remember we had that huge game last year at Fenway Park, and then everyone raced out to pick him up. And to me, he's a 15-team league guy when he's playing regularly. But I've had a lot of people ask me on Twitter, like, is this someone, because when he got hot, is this someone I should go out and pick up? And there seems to always be some fantasy intrigue about him. I'm just not there anymore. I don't know why, but there's always been intrigue about C.J. Cron since he started in 2014. I've kind of let it go, and I'm into, like, I'll believe it when I see it. And when I say see it, I mean, like, a much longer hot streak than than what he's been of late. And the way you ask the question, I think you're in the same boat.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I'm not a buyer on him. Look, if you need something, if you need help right now, there's certainly no reason that you can't pick him up and ride it for a little while. You know, there's no problem with that. But you know, as far as believing it's anything more than a hot streak, I really don't. You mentioned Fenway last year. We had a 68 plate appearance stretch last year where he hit 5 home runs, hit 21 RBI, and slugged 613. You have some power, and he does have some power. You're going to run into some home runs sometimes. So I'd like to be wrong. I'd like for it to work out, but I'm not any higher on him than if you need somebody to plug in, he's hot, so go ahead.
Yeah, in a 15-team league, grab him. And the Angels are surprisingly, like, right in the middle of the race, which I think is really cool since I like Mike Trout's team being in the middle of a postseason race. And because of that, I think they're going to play Cron if he's hitting well because they're a team that needs offense. So I think he's going to play in a 15-team league, like I said, I'd add him. I wouldn't cut someone in a 12-team league. Like, if I was going to go way back in our conversation, if I was finally ready to make the Miguel Cabrera drop, it would not be for C.J. Cron. I would want something much more exciting on waivers than that.
That makes sense to me. The other piece of real news in baseball lately, aside from Bryce Harper's injury, has been the arrivals of a lot of really exciting prospects. Some of them much more regarded in the long run. Some of them guys who are really hot right now. Yoan Moncada, Rhys Hoskins, Rafael Devers, Dominic Smith, Ahmed Rosario. To me, for a variety of reasons, Devers is the guy that stands out there. And I know we kind of talked him down a month ago, but he's a guy who was raking this year. He's a performance and scouting prospect. He's got a full opportunity in a good, though not great and not as good as it's reputed to be, lineup. He's in a ballpark that should fit his skills. I like pretty much everything about his situation. And then I might like Hoskins next just because he hits. And he's not nearly the sort of top 20 prospect the other guys are, but he hits. He hits everywhere. He has hit everywhere he's ever been. He hits for power. And then the rest of the guys I'm a little less crazy about in the short term. Where do you see that pack of prospects?
Yeah, I'm with you on Devers. I think he's just because he's hitting well and he's in a good lineup, and he's the one of them who's been really hot and has really established himself. And we talked when the Red Sox traded for Eduardo Nunez that Devers would have to hit to stay in the lineup. Well, I think the big beneficiary of the Pedroia injury was actually Devers a little bit, because now there's the perfect place to put Nunez. They don't have to have any reason to take Devers out of the lineup, and he can really just relax and do his thing. And I think he's staying in. Hoskins might be number two for me. I totally know what you mean. I feel like he might be a little more big league ready with his bat, but not have the long-term upside of some of the other ones. I still can't kick my love for Rosario, though. And he started off really poorly, but then the last few days, he's done some good things. He's hit a couple home runs. They're letting him run a lot. I'd love to see them move him to the top of the lineup, but also because shortstop's not deep, I think I might have Rosario second. I haven't given up on him. And then kind of Hoskins and Moncada. And Moncada has played better of late. I think I still think there's a potential for him to have some nice stretches like the rest of the way. And to me, Smith is totally at the back of the pack. But I have found fantasy owners, when they're asking us questions on Twitter, being really impatient with these players. And we saw with Hoskins and we saw with Rosario, they started off, they didn't do anything for their first few games. I think Hoskins, it was about 4 games. Rosario, it's about 5 or 6 games. And then all of a sudden, boom, Hoskins hits 3 home runs in 2 games. Rosario hits a big home run against Phillies and then follows that up, you know, with some other good performances. So I think owners need to give these guys a little more patience before they jump off, because there is a lot of talent on that list.
The one, excuse me, I'm with you on one particular thing. I am not crazy about Smith, really, even in the long run. I mean, I see a first baseman who doesn't hit for power, and I wonder what, from a fantasy perspective, there is there to like. So, yeah, I think that all kind of makes sense. We finally moved to starting pitchers, and Dallas Keuchel, first 3 games back from the DL, more walks than strikeouts, a 1.3 ground ball to fly ball ratio, which is very unlike him. And his last time out, 7 strikeouts, 3 walks, 11 grounders to 7 fly balls, still not quite where you want him to be, but closer, more the guy that you're anticipating him to be. I'm not fully convinced, but I'm feeling pretty fine about him right now. Do you still have concerns, or is one start enough to kind of put your mind at ease?
I still have a bit of concern. It alleviated enough concern that I would put him back in the lineup. Like I did say to some people for that game in Texas, where he did pitch well, to consider benching him. I mean, this is someone who had given up 8 runs in 4 innings against the White Sox. He had some really poor outings in Texas the last couple of years when he wasn't going well, like last season especially, when he wasn't going well. And they know him pretty well. The only thing holding me back a little bit is the walk rate since he has been back has been much higher than it was before. So I don't know if it's Taylor's laying off some pitches that are just a little too low in the strike zone or if his control is just not there. But I'd love to see him get back to walking just 1 or 2 batters a game, because he's walking more like 3 a game, and in some short starts, he's giving up, 3 walks in 4 or 5 innings. So I'm not totally back, but I feel good enough to put him back in my lineup.
Let's talk about a couple of Angels starters. Parker Bridwell is putting up some pretty nice ratios, but is not missing bats. Andrew Haney back from Tommy John surgery, a guy who was a pretty doggone good starting pitcher 2 years ago. A couple of kind of different pitchers for sure, but in the same rotation. Do you like either of them that much for the rest of the year?
I wouldn't say I like either of them a lot. I would say that the way pitching's gone this year, if you want to give Bridwell a shot, I won't argue with it. Like, his FIP's 4.52, which obviously isn't very good. There's probably another shoe to drop here where he has some regression. That being said, he doesn't walk many batters. So, I mean, if he's not walking batters, at the very least when he's at home or when he's at a park that probably won't give up a lot of easy home runs, I think then you can use Bridwell. With Haney, I think it's a long layoff, and you and I both cautioned people in getting too heavily invested in players coming back from Tommy John right away, especially if they're not ace-level pitchers. I've heard some good buzz on Haney, and I'm not totally shooting that down. I think I'd be more likely to give a shot to Bridwell if he's sitting on waivers in my league than Haney for the next few weeks. Are you with me, or would you rather maybe chase a little more upside?
I think that makes sense. I'm really not crazy about either of them. I would have to have a real specific need for Bridwell, just because starters who don't strike guys out make me nervous, because when it goes bad, it goes real bad. But the thing with Haney is that he didn't really overpower guys before. So, if that command is still not quite there upon return, and that's often the way that goes, that can be kind of a danger zone.
Yeah, and I mean, this is the time of year with these starters. Like, this is the time of year where you've protected your ratios. In a lot of leagues, the wins races, in a roto league, a lot of roto leagues, the wins races are really tight. And there's no prize usually for finishing fourth or fifth. So this is the time of year where owners maybe just want to take Bridwell, use him. You don't get a lot of strikeouts. Hopefully he doesn't hurt your ratios. But if he wins you a few games down the stretch, that could be really valuable in a season where not a lot of pitchers are winning that many games.
Yeah. Chase Anderson returns apparently this weekend. He was very good before he got hurt. I like him. If he's out there, I put it this way. I pick him up before either of the other two guys we just talked about. If he's sitting on waivers in your league, he's a guy who's worth picking up, isn't he?
Yeah, totally. I mean, the strikeout rate was great. The control was fine. I think this is someone who is sitting out there in a lot of 10-team leagues. Was dropped, and I get why he was dropped. I mean, you can go back to the CJ Cron. Like, there were 3 full seasons of not so great performances from Anderson going into this year, but he sustained something. This isn't like Cron, where Cron had a couple good weeks. Like, Anderson sustained good performances for months. I think that this is someone that you could consider adding down the stretch, and someone who, yeah, before they go looking at the Bridwells and the ones who have posted low ratios lately, go and check and see if he's still on your waiver wire, because I think there are a lot of leagues where people can add him.
Trevor Bauer, to me, is kind of the definition of a guy I'm probably never going to have, because I need to see it so many times in a row before I believe it, that somebody is going to jump on him and believe it before I do. With that said, if he's still there, this is enough that you believe it, at least for the short term, right?
Yeah, especially if he needs strikeouts, because the strikeout total, this is almost like the opposite of Bridwell, where the strikeout totals Bauer is putting up are so high. He could really help you move in that category if he's not hurting your ratio. So, totally risky. He has a 4.75 ERA this year, 4.48 career. That's a lot of, that's 679 innings of a 4.48 ERA. So, it's hard to think that. I know he's hot right now. I do think he'll cool off, but the strikeouts are there, so it makes him worth taking a chance on. I would pick him up over those Angels. I would not pick him up over Anderson. So that's how I'll rank them. Would you have
him in order? I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think there are specific scenarios where I would pick him up before Anderson, though.
Right. Yeah.
You know, again, so much of it is what you have and what you need right now, and there are scenarios where if you weren't really worried about your ratios, but, you know, you could really benefit from strikeouts, then Bauer is the guy over Anderson.
Yeah, and like I just talked about with that, like if you really need to take a chance on, instead of just sitting around finishing fourth or fifth in your league, if you want to take a chance on getting up to first or second, and maybe it bumps you down to seventh or eighth if it doesn't work out, well, I think Bauer's like the perfect definition of a guy you're taking a chance on. If he had a 2 ERA and, you know, a K per nine over 10 in the next month, it wouldn't be totally shocking.
Right.
At the same time, if he had a 6 ERA in the next month, it wouldn't be shocking at all either.
We will talk closers in just a moment, but before we do, I want to take a second to tell you about the StatCast podcast, a show dedicated to the analytics that drive front office decisions in the modern game. It's hosted by Mike Petriello and Matt Myers. Last week, they discussed a few under-the-radar names making a key impact on postseason races like Chad Green and Zach Godley. If you want to hear the rest of that list, you could download the show from Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts by searching for StatCast podcast or going to www.statcastpodcast.com. And we say this all the time, but it is always true. If you are a serious fantasy player and you are not taking advantage of StatCast information, you are not doing all you can to win.
Yeah, we saw a big jump this year in StatCast, you know, pushing towards fantasy, and I think we'll see it again this offseason and then into next year. So if you're not on board now, this is the time to get on board because it's only going to get bigger.
I am sad to say that it appears that the Bud Norris era is officially over. More importantly than that, it appears that the Cam Bedrosian era has begun. This was a guy, I think, from the beginning of the year, we kind of expected eventually to be the guy in Anaheim. He's pretty clearly the guy now, isn't he?
I think he is. I saw Keenan Middleton get a couple of saves, and I thought, okay, well, maybe he's not the guy. But yesterday, you know, against the Nationals, Middleton went pitched the eighth, Bedrosian pitched the ninth. I think that's where they're going. The more I step back and look at their candidates, Bedrosian's the one who really mostly checks the boxes. I mean, I know they don't have Mariano Rivera on their roster, but Bedrosian's the one. He has enough career experience that I think you give him the shot in the ninth inning. There's pretty solid numbers this year. His FIP's nice and is really low this year, so that's good. Strikeout rate's really nice this year. I think he's their guy, and I think you want to add him. If you need saves, you missed out the big closer run at the beginning of August, or you still need more saves, I think he's your guy to add. Matthew, would you say, if I said he was going to be, say, roughly the 20th or 22nd or so best closer the rest of the way, do you think that's about where you'd put him?
I'm a tick higher on him than that, actually.
Okay.
That's what I was thinking. You know, we talked, I think it was last week, about this guy, you know, and I had him sort of bottom of the top half. I have him a bit behind that. I probably have him somewhere between 15 and 20. I like him quite a bit. I think he's safe partly because he's kind of been the guy that you knew was going to be the guy for long enough now that if they're giving him the job, I don't think they want to take it away from him. Now, look, we said that about Matt Bush, too. And sometimes circumstances change, and the Angels are in a pennant race. So if things get shaky, they may have a quicker trigger finger here. But I think this is a guy they want to be their guy. So I anticipate that he's pretty safe, and he's a pretty good pitcher. So I like him quite a bit. I don't think he's anywhere near the class of guys who fell into closing jobs that we talked about last week.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
We move on to the team that has created more of those fall into the closer role guys than any other team, both for their own team and others as well. That's the White Sox. Anybody you want there?
No, I don't think so. Like maybe Jake Patryka can get a few saves down the stretch, but I don't think it's worth taking a chance on your ratios with someone like that. Unless someone really emerges in the next couple of weeks, then I would reevaluate it maybe around the beginning of September. But even if I needed saves, I would go out and try to trade for them if my trade deadline hadn't happened yet, or make a heavy bid on someone like Bedrosian. I don't think, beyond the fact that the White Sox don't have a reliever who looks good for the role, they also look like a team that could easily be the worst team in the American League the rest of the way. So I don't really want to chase any of their relievers. Do you think I'm missing on someone, or are you?
No, there's nobody I like enough there to be early on. And that I want to use that to set up our next topic, because I was early on Kyle Barraclough. basically the day before he was activated, when they said he's being activated tomorrow, I picked him up. Now, his first game back was a little shaky, but you know there's kind of a difference there. Like, Bearclaw is not the guy yet, and it could well be Ziegler till the end of the year. But Bearclaw's upside is so high that if he does become the guy, he's a guy you want to be in on. So, you know, I don't know exactly how shallow a league you're willing to take that risk in right now, but to me, he's exactly the kind of pitcher that you get as that closer in waiting, because the upside is so, so high. How much do you like Bearclaw?
Yeah, I like him enough. Yeah, like you were saying, like, what kind of situation are you in where you pick him up? I think if you're in a league that's deep enough where you can't get Bedrosian or Vizcaino or those other closers, so they're all gone, that's probably not a 10-team league. In a 10-team league, most of those, probably there's someone who's actually closing on waivers. In a 12-team league, though, I think that if you need saves, that's about where I'm at with Bearclaw. And then maybe I move into 10-team league if I read something in the coming days, or if Ziegler blows a save, then maybe I'm quick to grab Bearclaw. To me, I don't mind Ziegler at all as a pitcher, and I think he can be their closer the rest of the way. But if you're running the Marlins, like, this is probably the perfect time. At some point in the next 6 weeks is the time where maybe
you almost have to. From their position organizationally. Look, yeah. I don't really believe there's a whole lot of difference between pitching tight situations in the eighth and the ninth, but most big league organizations still do. If you believe there's a difference, now is the time to find out whether this guy can do it.
Right, exactly. And it might not happen in the next couple of days, like, he just got back from the DL, but in about a week or 2 weeks, that would be about, I think around the beginning of September, that would be prime time for them to start putting him in save chances and see what happens.
Yep. Aroldis Chapman has been very shaky lately. He said after his shaky Sunday night game that he, or maybe it was Monday, a recent appearance, he acknowledged that he has some discomfort in, I think it's his right hamstring. Something is not right there, and the Yankees have an army of other options. Now, Joe Girardi said most recently, just a day or two ago, that Chapman is his closer and he's not going on the DL. With that said, I can see them at least giving him more days off. They have a ton of guys. They can go to Robertson. They can go to Betances. If they don't want to push Chapman and they only want to push and pitch him a couple times a week here now, I think that that is an option they have. So are there situations where you might bench Chapman?
I think it's quite possible. I think that if, first of all, okay, I never thought I'd live in a world where we considered starting Trevor Bauer over Aroldis Chapman. But if you're really set in saves, and that could set means you're could mean you're ahead, it could mean you're behind, or it could just mean you're in a gap where you feel like you can't really catch teams and they can't and the teams can't catch you, then I could see you saying, well, Bauer can get me a lot of strikeouts and Chapman can't, and because of his workload, and the ratios from Chapman haven't been awesome. I also think, in those head-to-head leagues with smaller rosters and only certain spots for relievers, you may look at other options and consider them better closers. Like, really, for the rest of the season, is Chapman a better closer option than Vizcaino, for example? Like, is he better than that? I mean, I think we can say he's not in the top tier of closers for the rest of this year. Next year he can be, but not for the rest of this year, the way things have gone. But is he even in that middle tier? Like, if you only have, say, two relief pitcher spots on your in your active lineup for a weekly league, it's quite possible, isn't it, that you would consider benching him and using someone else who's just healthier? And
yeah, I think you at least think about it. And he's definitely a guy right now you are watching, day by day. It's a question of, you know, does he continue to look a little physically compromised? Watch what the Yankees do each day and watch how they set it up and how, you know, do they go to Robertson in the sixth or seventh, or is there a game where Robertson doesn't pitch early and maybe you think, they're saving him for the ninth? It's that kind of thing. It's on that kind of line, is I guess the point, where if he comes out and pitches tonight and Saturday and strikes out six guys over those two games and gets a couple of saves, I'm feeling pretty good about him because the guy has a long track record. But if there are indications of his physical health being compromised or the Yankees looking at other options or both, then yeah, his assessment for the rest of the year changes.
I'll give you a great stat to show that maybe with Chapman, we don't want to taste like some upside that just doesn't exist through the rest of the season. Since the All-Star break, he's appeared 14 times in only three of those 14 appearances has he struck out at least two batters. And I mean, when Chapman's going well, that seems to happen almost every time. It feels like it happens almost every time he's out there. He has more times since the All-Star break where he has struck out zero batters than where he has struck out two or more. So when he takes the mound right now, it's pretty reasonable to assume he's going to strike out about one batter. And that's not exciting for your closer at that point. I really think it's in what you said, I think, on managing him day to day. In a league where you set your lineups weekly, if you have other closer options, especially if you're in playoffs and things soon, like you may want to just put in the player who's most likely to still be healthy and closing by the weekend, because he could really hurt you in a week if he pitches once on a Tuesday and then does, and then is out for days or something.
Right. I think that the sort of approach answer to it is, if you've got a couple of guys that you believe in more, then I'm not going to tell you not to go with them. He is out of the category where you say, no way can you bench him. You know, if you decide you want to take that chance and you don't want to miss out if he gets 10 strikeouts next week, you know, I think that's perfectly defensible. But if you also say, boy, I'm a little nervous about this and I have better options, I think it's an entirely defensible stance to take.
Yeah, and I think it's the big picture takeaway for me also is, it's okay to say I don't even want a player in my active lineup in late August or September of 2017 and still think that that player could be a top three or four player at their position next year. Like, we're not, like, we got to make these decisions down the stretch with small sample sizes and trends in mind.
Finally, we move to the two start pitchers. That's a pretty nice list. Taijuan Walker at the Mets and home for the Giants. Mike Foltynewicz, home for Seattle and Colorado. Rick Porcello at Cleveland and home for Baltimore. John Gray at Kansas City and at Atlanta. Carlos Rodon, home for Minnesota and Detroit. Jason Hamill, home for Colorado and at Cleveland. The guy I kind of want to focus on here, in part because he's just a personal favorite of mine and has been, honestly, since he was in college, is Carlos Rodon. He has been brilliant lately. He has been absolutely superb over his last four starts. And those are pretty good matchups. Those are not teams that scare you a lot. With that said, Carlos Rodon also still has one win all year, even over those four brilliant starts. You know, he's pitching for a pretty bad team. So I still like him. I'd probably still take the flyer on him. I like Foltynewicz pretty well. I don't like the matchups that much for Porcello. He's been kind of shaky again. I mean, Walker's probably the guy. For the combination of pitcher and matchups, Walker is probably the guy. But if you're not worried about wins, then Rodon might be it.
Yeah, Rodon's really throwing well. I think he's probably, for me, the guy on this list, and Walker's probably second, or they're like 1 and 1A. And then I think Foltynewicz and Gray are probably like 3 and 3A on the list for me. Like, you get Gray, who hasn't pitched well really at all this, like, he has had some good starts, but overall he hasn't pitched well this season, home or road. But you get him out of Coors for two starts, I think that's pretty reasonable. And then for me, Porcello's fallen far enough that he and Hamill are kind of like 5 and 5A, where I'm using them just if I'm going for volume, you know, and looking for 8 or 10 strikeouts across two starts, and hopefully you get a win. But I'm fully expecting them to hurt my ratios.
All right, that's the Fantasy 411 for this week. We will talk to you again a week from now. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking the time to talk.